This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 6th of July 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 6th of July, which this week have been edited by Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are MasterChef Cooks for Cancer Haven, Inquest Highlights Failings, and Hats the Way to Do It, Fair Weather at Last for Festival. So let's have this story behind the first headline, please. Heather.
MasterChef Cooks for Cancer Haven. The 2016 MasterChef winner, Jane Devonshire, cooked up a veritable feast at the Long Barn in Alsford. The exclusive dinner was hosted by BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor, who is also chairman of the Development Board of Breast Cancer Haven, Wessex, which is part of a national charity which provides specialist support to anyone affected by breast cancer. Almost £7,000 was raised on the night, with almost every ingredient and beverage donated and all waiting staff serving as volunteers to ensure every penny went to Breast Cancer Haven, Wessex. Sally Taylor, a breast cancer survivor herself, said, "What a superb night, and I'm so grateful to Jane Devonshire for the fantastic food she produced at Long Barn. Thank you to everyone who supported us and made the evening so special, as well as raising vital money for Breast Cancer Haven. It was the perfect summer's evening, and guests were treated to peach bellinis on the terrace, served by local mixologist Nick from In The Mix, and then sat down in the beautifully decorated Long Barn with flower arrangements donated by Sarah Barrett from the Flower Field. The four-course meal included local trout and wasabi, local lamb cooked two ways, and cheese donated by local cheese companies."
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Inquest highlights failings. A Winchester care home has been criticised following the death of a resident. Elizabeth Wood, known as Jill, suffered a number of falls while living at St Cross Grange. As a result of at least one of those falls, Mrs Wood, the wife of former Winchester City Council leader Keith Wood, suffered head injuries resulting in her death on October the 6th. Mrs Wood's son, Mark Dewar, told an inquest that the 82-year-old had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and dementia, but her condition deteriorated following a fall in August. Mr. Dewar said, "I really found it difficult to get through to her. I was shocked." He added that he called St. Paul's Surgery, where Mrs. Wood was registered, and urged doctors to give her a brain scan. Mr. Dewar said, "The carers were very caring. My issue relates to the management of the home. It's very apparent that there are what appear to be statutory breaches." After being admitted to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in early September, a scan revealed a haemorrhage and she remained in hospital until her death. Dr. Alex Charkin, her GP, told the inquest that the care home had not informed him about her falls and that if they had, he could have taken action to assess her well-being. During the inquest, Mr. Short asked what improvements were being made at St. Cross Grange, which is in the process of recruiting a new manager. He said, "I note that a series of inquiries and investigations have found shortcomings at the home. It's not possible for me to find that if processes had been in place, they would have prevented falls." He added, "Communication by care staff was inadequate." Fiona Kane, Senior Operations Manager for Greensleeves, which runs St. Cross Grange, as well as 21 other homes, said that there were now much more robust risk assessments in place. Mr. Short added that a CQC report on the home in April does not make happy reading. Following an inspection, the watchdog rated the home as requires improvement with inadequate safety. However, the report did rate the home as being good for caring, which Mrs. Wood's family acknowledged. A conclusion of accidental death was recorded.
And Jane's got the third headline story.
Which is, hat's the way to do it. Fair weather at last for festival. She says it all, really. Rarely in its 40-odd years has the Hat Fair been blessed with such glorious weather. Perhaps the famous summer of 1976 may have beaten it for temperatures, although at the weekend, Otterbourne was reported to have been the hottest spot in the country. Since the start, the event has been the same. Several days of street theatre throughout Winchester city centre, including the Broadway and Cathedral Close. The public can stop and enjoy or just walk on by. At the end of each act, they can show the appreciation by putting money in the performer's hat on the ground. Changes this year included holding the Sunday picnic at North Walls Park instead of the traditional Oram's Arbour. An estimated 55,000 people, a record, enjoyed the show, although as everything is free, it is difficult to put exact figures on things. The small size of the sloping park at the Arbour prevented organisers from maximising the number of commercial stalls that bring in the vital revenue that allows the event to be free to the public. Performers this year got their own green room to rest between shows at the former post office on Middlebrook Street. The annual three-day festival, organised by the Live Theatre Winchester Trust, burst into life with a school's parade on Friday, from Winchester Cathedral to the Guildhall, and culminated in a packed-out family picnic day at North Walls Recreation Ground on Sunday. One of the highlights of over 50 acts and activities at 18 venues was No-Fit State Circus and Motion House's thrilling dance circus collaboration Block. 20 oversized blocks were fashioned to resemble giant concrete Jenga blocks for the performers to play out a powerful fusion of dance and circus. Other highlights included, I don't know how you pronounce this, but Sir Mesures Filage, performing a fusion of trampoline, acrobatics and juggling with live music. Max Calaf Seve's Dip, an interrogation of relationships in society today with breathtaking, air-twisting tricks and funky tunes, and Helen Eastman Productions' Bicycle Boy, a bicycle-powered musical for children and their families. A fabulously large flash mob choir was created from members of the community following a workshop at Theatre Royal Winchester that burst into song at various locations to surprise and delight the crowds throughout Saturday. Those wishing to find a calmer area enjoyed a cup of tea and a slice of cake at the village fete at St John's Lawn and had the opportunity to watch a series of living portraits, short films documenting the lives and experiences of older residents of Winchester and Corby in the St John's Chapel. Andrew Loretto, Hat Fair and Engagement Director of Live Theatre Winchester Trust, said, "We are absolutely thrilled with the response to this year's Hat Fair. Winchester was buzzing with crowds and international acts, all basking in glorious sunshine and enjoying the magic. The move to our new Sunday venue at North Walls Recreation Ground was also successful, leading to an increased offer for all ages. We would like to thank all our supporters, investors and sponsors, as well as the dozens of volunteers without whom the festival simply couldn't take place." And this is inevitably attached to a lot of lovely photos of people doing peculiar handstands in weird costumes and dancing with enormous fluffy yellow hats, and a picture of St Faith's School leading the Hat Fair Parade on the Friday with decorated plates on sticks that they'd made themselves, and of course wearing hats. And the bicycle ballet presentation of blazing salads, a whole lot of people on bicycles in blue uniforms, a man hopping up and down on something with a great crowd watching him, and a picture of a crowd roaring with laughter as they watch something enjoyable.
And that concludes the headline stories. Right, we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, historical items, question and answer My Winchester, editorial comment, first person and Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Maxwell. John Dick Jack Maxwell of Alsford, aged 85. Beckwith. Anthony Henry Tony Beckwith, peacefully aged 95. Chapel. Stanley George Chapel of Somerton, Somerset, formerly Hampshire, peacefully at his home, aged 86. Harrison. Victoria Harrison, peacefully at home with her family. Haskell. Gwendolyn Haskell, peacefully aged 83. Humphrey. David Malcolm Humphrey, at home in peace, aged 79. Stevens. Patricia Stevens, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, aged 81. Webb, Raymond Webb, at home, aged 87. Wyard, Rupert James Wyard, peacefully at Harrogate District Hospital, aged 52. And now we're going to have Christian comment, and that's with Jane.
And Christian comment this week is still reluctant to discuss death. Last week, I conducted a funeral in the Methodist Chapel in King Somborne, the church for which I used to have pastoral charge. I was pleased to be asked, as she had been the organist there for over 50 years and was there when I first preached as a novice local preacher in 1985. We were fortunate that her niece, the current organist, had kept the notebook of favourite hymns of the congregation. I had worried that I was always inflicting my limited repertoire on the long-suffering regulars. We were able to sing three well-known rousing hymns, knowing that they were her choice. I remember many years ago asking the elderly mother of my partner if she had any choices for her funeral as we were driving somewhere. This request was met by an indignant, "Are you planning to bump me off?" We explained, and grudgingly she came up with one, which we did actually have in due course some years later. My own father told me, when very ill, that he was hanging on for me to be ordained so that I could take his funeral. He died 6 months after my ordination 20 years ago, and I took the main part of his service. But I didn't ever have the heart to tell him that ordination wasn't in fact necessary to conduct funerals. A recent report on the cost of dying by an insurance company stated that as a nation we are still very hesitant to discuss death. And amazingly, only 1% of people who have organised a funeral in the last 4 years were actually aware of their loved one's wishes. Of all the people surveyed, 53% of people said it would have been easier to organise their loved one's funeral if they'd had a discussion with them beforehand about death and dying. Although the majority of funerals in the UK are traditional, the number of non-religious services are on the rise, reflecting a growing change in our society. 16 years ago, when the census was taken, 7.7 million people regarded themselves as non-religious. Yet, when the most recent census was taken, only 6 years ago, in 2011, this figure had almost doubled to show 14 million people regarding themselves as non-religious. You don't have to consider yourself a humanist in order to have a humanist funeral. Many people choose this as their funeral option simply because they don't have any religious beliefs. In my own experience, many people like a religious framework, but tell me they don't want my heavy stuff, and most certainly don't want a sermon. I know some clergy see this as an opportunity to preach to a captive audience, but I have always found that the life of a believer is always a sufficient message to others, and do my best to reflect the mourner's wishes. So, have you chosen your hymns and music? I have. That was by Rosemary A. Baker. And interesting to know that the most popular funeral hymn of the last 10 years is Always Look on the Bright Side of Life from Monty Python.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Nine letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Internet Trolls, Councillor Anne Weir is writing. I welcome your initiative on online trolls in the Chronicle of June the 28th. As a female candidate in the recent Winchester City Council elections, it was unsettling, as I'm sure it was intended to be, to start receiving increasingly intemperate emails claiming to come from a local resident who wanted my views on a hot topic. I offered repeatedly, as I did for all correspondents during the election, to talk this over face-to-face with the individual who hid behind a pseudonym. As the messages became more intimidating, I called time on the correspondence. I am grateful to residents of St Barnabas Ward who re-elected me to serve them with a greatly increased majority, and thank them for putting their confidence in me and the values I stand for. But imagine my dismay when the same troll who tried to throw me off balance in the election started to show up in the Chronicle online comments. Councillor Anne Weir, Woodstock Court, Week, Winchester.
Pam Stevens writes about a service which is at risk. Sir, I refer to Jeff Pilliner's letter on page 24 of your paper of June 28th. The New Alsford Town Trust has run the minibus service for 48 years, with the prime object of giving a bus service to the elderly and disabled residents of Alsford and surrounding villages. This helps them keep their independence and gives them a lifeline to the outside world and an opportunity to meet other people. The minibus service on Friday mornings gives some 25 to 30 disabled and elderly residents the opportunity to shop in Alsford and have a chat and coffee at the community centre. In order to abide by health and safety requirements, it is necessary to park and drop off the passengers in a safe environment at the community centre. Many of the passengers have limited mobility and in some cases need to use the tail lift. The Trust also runs the minibus service for the Giles Group, most in wheelchairs, every second Monday afternoon in the month. It is essential that the Giles Group have minibus parking at the community centre, which they use for their meetings. All these activities have carried on for most of the 48 years until the recent intervention by the Chamber of Commerce, acting for all its members, who do not want to have the minibus taking up any parking spaces for even a limited time. This is a total disgrace, and the trustees will consider boycotting the Friday shopping in Alsford and taking passengers elsewhere if this matter is not resolved. The Trust and I do not run this minibus for service for financial gain. It is run for the benefit of the elderly and disabled residents who we care about. The Trust is very grateful to all volunteer drivers and the community centre management. However, a couple of drivers have intimated that if this matter is not resolved, they'll be giving up the driving of the minibus to avoid the hassle. Should this happen, the shopping trips would have to be reduced and the elderly and disabled would suffer again. Is this what the Chamber of Commerce want? Pam Stevens, Town Trustee, Whittonhill, Alsford.
And this letter from David Simmons is headed Midterm Coup. Sir, I do not think anyone can criticise the Lib Dems' Martin Todd for attempting a coup to overturn the administration of the Conservative group of the City Council last Wednesday night. As one of the Lib Dem councillors said, politics is an ugly business. So certain were they of the outcome, the Lib Dems even took pre-council meeting shots of themselves fisting the air in victory. The action of the enigmatic Councillor Kim Gottlieb in voting with the Lib Dems to bring about the fall of his own party is likewise odd. But no one could have predicted the walk across the chamber to join the Conservatives of the Lib Dem Councillor Jamie Scott. His action saved the administration. Members of the public heard impassioned speeches from the Conservative members as they sought to defend their record. Huge work has been put into the planning of the leisure centre. 600 council homes are being built. Lib Dems had been absent from meetings on recycling, about which they were complaining. Caroline Horrell, it was said, had led a very open and welcoming administration, working long hours with huge commitment. Because of the odium thrown at politicians, it is often easy to forget the hard work they put in. No one present will forget the passion and the tears. The city really means something to all members present, and no one could ignore the fact that amid the game-playing and the number-crunching, the members take their roles very seriously. And with a council tied at 22 to 22, they all have to work together on committees. For me, it would have been unfair if Caroline Horrell had been voted out. There is no doubt that Conservatives have to put across more clearly what they are doing to the general public so that they can make up their minds in an election. The Lib Dems have every right to oppose and bring the council to account, but perhaps a mid-term coup is not the way to do it. And that was from David Simmons, Sleepersdale Gardens, Winchester.
And there's another letter about the Allswyd situation. Parking aggression, it's headed, and it's from Brian Clark. I read with interest the latest Allswyd Chamber of Commerce report and share their sentiments on the closing of four independent shops in the town. I also go along with their following statement, which I quote. It does highlight how important it is for all of us to support our local individual town businesses to keep Allswyd thriving. I am therefore bewildered by the Chamber's aggressive attitude to the parking of the town bus outside the community centre on Friday mornings. This bus makes three trips in and around the Allswyd district, bringing up to 36 people of restricted mobility into the town to shop at the independent businesses. Because of the Chamber's hostile attitude, we are now in a position that we cannot secure a safe dropping off and pick-up point for the passengers. This episode does not say much for the Chamber's community spirit. And equally concerning is the apparent suggestion of Winchester City Council to allow double parking outside the community centre to allow passengers to alight and board. This is at the busiest junction in Allswyd. Beside the safety issues, this would have the potential to bring traffic in Allswyd to a standstill, especially with the number of heavy vehicles going to and from the Salad Centre through Broad Street. It is unfortunate that the decision to stop us reserving the two parking bays for the bus was made prior to a full discussion of the circumstances, which has resulted in the bully winning. Brian Clark, Chairman, Allswyd and District Community Association.
And here's a letter from Peter Clark, ambiguously headed Reservations. Sir, your report of the Winchester City Planning Committee meeting on the proposed scheme for 320 homes, new open space and a new industrial estate, chronicled June 28, says that the scheme was unanimously approved by the city planners. This is incorrect, as Councillor Gottlieb, who has since quit the Tory party, recused himself from the committee's deliberations and spoke eloquently for the objectors. It is also notable that several of the councillors, while voting in favour of granting planning permission, expressed serious reservations about the impact that the proposed new roundabout on the A31 would have on the environment and the local road network. It is to be hoped that these reservations will be taken fully into account in the course of implementing the scheme. Peter Clark, Hague Road, Allswyd.
And Caroline and Richard York write a good egg. Sir, we were delighted to read, Chronicle June the 28th, of the award of the Millennium Egg to Paul Morgan of Warren's Office Limited. Your readers may care to know that in addition to his many contributions to Winchester's business life, Paul and his team have been long-standing supporters of the Winchester Chamber Music Festival and many other events in the city's cultural life. And that was from Caroline and Richard York, Alison Way, Winchester.
Plan for the future. Thanks to an article in last week's Chronicle, I became aware of a City Council exhibition about the new leisure centre planning application, which I attended on Friday. The displayed plans showed that the architect had done a good job, in my opinion, bearing in mind that the most practical and cost-effective design for a leisure centre is generally a rectangular-shaped box. Sadly, the scheme still showed an 8-court main hall, albeit with more generous runoff areas, making it a little larger overall than the current main hall. The new Eastleigh Leisure Centre has been far more ambitious and provided an impressive 15-court main hall. Also, the new Winchester Centre proposes only 2 dedicated fitness studios, although, again, to be fair, they will be larger than the existing ones and could be topped up by using squash courts. But despite these tweaks, the key point is that the new centre, with an 8-court hall and 2 fitness studios, will simply match current River Park provision and offer no more additional courts or studios. Even the occasional use of the squash courts for other purposes currently takes place, so there's no gain there either. As River Park Leisure Centre users know, the current demand for spaces in fitness studios is high, and whilst those participating generally do not belong to any of the clubs which have been consulted, they do generate hundreds of attendances each week. Also, additional capacity is essential, not only for our increasing and hopefully healthier population, but to cope with the anticipated demands from the university, as it will, quite understandably, want to see something in return for its investment. River Park Leisure Centre users and trainers I speak to remain puzzled as to why the council cannot see the need for a genuine increase in the dry side capacity of the new centre, which a 12-court hall and 3 dedicated fitness suites would achieve. The new centre will probably serve our community for the next 40-plus years, so let's hope that the newly balanced council will take a more enlightened view and provide something that at least attempts to cater for those inevitable future demands. C.J. Ashcroft, Main Road, Martyrworthy.
John Miller says there is still time. Sir, John Cranfield keeps bleating on about what he mistakenly describes as a vocal minority of objectors to the grossly excessive proposed housing and industrial development in Alsford, letters June 28th. If he really wants to see what a vocal minority really looks like, he only needs to look in the mirror. Everyone I speak to in Alsford and Bishop Sutton was as appalled as I was when the City Council Planning Committee brushed aside the cogently argued objections expressed at the public meeting on June the 21st. If a local referendum were held on this grotesque overdevelopment, the size of the majority against it would be enormous. There is still time for the City Council to reconsider their antisocial decision. John Miller, Bishop Sutton Road, Bishop Sutton.
And Geraldine Guthrie writes, too much gloom. Sir, with the sun shining and the prospect of a pleasant afternoon visiting a garden, I was feeling quite cheerful when I sat round down to read this week's Hampshire Chronicle whilst having my breakfast, only to be plunged into the depths of depression. Why? Because I read the letters to the editor, mostly negative and complaining, apart from one welcoming defeat of campaigners. So I turned to the letters to the editor extra. Ah, at last, a letter from someone researching a murder case in 1942, requesting information from your readers. Not usually a cheerful subject, but in relation to the other correspondents, quite elating. Perhaps next week it will be better. And that was from Geraldine Guthrie, Milesdown Place, Winchester.
And that was the last letter to the editor for this week. Thank you very much for your contributions, everyone. Now it's time for your say. There's a lot of debate about legalising assisted death. We asked readers what they thought about making it legal for people to end their life when they want to, and Heather's got the answers.
Sarah Revel, aged 26, an architect of St Thomas's Street, Winchester, said, "I completely support assisted death. It should be provided on the NHS, especially for people with life-limiting illnesses that take away their mobility and dignity." John Kendall, aged 73 and retired draftsman of Shamblehurst Lane, Hedge End, said, "People should have the right to finish life when they want to, rather than in agony or sitting in a home. They should have the facilities to be able to choose." Mike Purton, aged 70, a retired engineer of Main Road, Otterbourne, said, "There's a lot of differing opinions, but I think they should have the option if that's what they want. It should be limited to people with no hope of a reasonable life." Matt Wallace, age 79, retired compliance officer of Green Hills, Winchester, said, "I think I would be against legalising it. When we start to legalise things like this, it's human nature to take them too far. But we should sympathise with those that do."
Now we're going back through the mists of time into our dusty old files for historical news items, and we'll start with 25 years ago with one read by Noel.
Yes, we have two items from Friday, July the 2nd, 1993. The first one, the sparkling success of elderflower champagne has had some of the fizz knocked out of it when the Court of Appeal ruled the word champagne must be taken off the labels. Three judges upheld a complaint by French champagne houses that using the word to describe the non-alcoholic £2.45 drink with its champagne-style bottles and wired corks was a potential threat to the reputation of genuine bubbly. But Dr. Guy Woodall and his partner Ray Bevan, whose company Thorncroft Alsford make and market the elderflower drink, vowed to fight on by seeking leave to appeal to the House of Lords, despite legal costs against them already running at over £200,000. "I don't believe anyone in their right mind thinks we have any effect on champagne," said Dr. Woodall, whose firm is based at Alsford. "It is fantasy to say the champagne image will be damaged by elderflower." Mr. Bevan, holding a bottle of elderflower with the champagne covered by his hand, said it was now a drink that dare not speak its name. We will have to keep everybody guessing as to what we will be calling it now," he said. Bill Gunn, chairman of the Champagne Association, representing most champagne importers, said, "I'm delighted. It's a very good day for champagne." He disputed media descriptions of the court case as a David and Goliath battle. "It tends to be forgotten that the champagne interests are made up of a very large number of very small producers whose operations are much smaller than Thorncroft's." And the second item, the Old Chesil Rectory, reputed to be Winchester's oldest house, is being reopened as an upmarket restaurant by Hampshire's acclaimed chef Nicholas Ruthven Stewart. On Tuesday, Mr. Ruthven Stewart, 38, of Northbrook, Bishop's Waltham, signed a long-term lease for the Grade 2 listed building with the approval of owners Winchester City Council. He intends to run the restaurant with his wife Christina, 40, and hopes restoration work will be completed in time for the restaurant to open at the end of August. The rectory has been empty for over a year since the previous tenants, New Forest Hotels, went into receivership in January 1992. The couple currently run Food for All Occasions, an outside catering business based in Bishop's Waltham, which they hope to continue from the new venture. "Our intention is to run the restaurant with the same menu upstairs and downstairs, the former you being tablecloths and napery, the latter brasserie bistro style with polished wood tables. We will have a full license that will allow customers to just have a drink if they wish," said Mr. Ruthven Stewart.
Now we're going to go back 50 years with Jane.
And 50 years ago was Saturday, July the 9th, 1968. The Minister of Housing and Local Government is to decide the future of two houses in an early Victorian terrace of four in Southgate Street. The houses, numbers 37 and 39, used to be the offices of the Hampshire Executive Council of the National Health Service, who would be prepared to sell the site for redevelopment. But Winchester City Council has made a preservation order on the two properties and the two other houses, the owners of which do not object to the order. On Tuesday, a ministry inspector held a public inquiry in Winchester when the City Council sought confirmation of the order and the Executive Council objected. The inspector, Mr. John Dowell, inspected the properties later in the day and will report to the minister, whose decision will be made known in due course. And secondly, although it was accepted that Roxford needed a bypass, Soberton should not have to suffer as a result, Hampshire County Council's Planning Committee were told in Winchester on Friday last week in a report by a subcommittee who met objectors to the proposal to use the disused Meon Valley railway line as a road. A counter-proposal had been put to divert the route back into the A32 directly south of Droxford, thereby preserving the amenities of Soberton on the other side of the valley. The planning committee, however, reaffirmed their decision to use the whole of the railway line from a point south of Soberton up through to West Meon.
Let's go back 100 years now, Heather.
It's Saturday, July the 6th, 1918, and there's two items. News has reached Winchester this week of the death from appendicitis in a hospital in Singapore of Lance Corporal J.H. Johnny Rowlands, Devonshire Regiment of 5 Hyde Close, Winchester. Previous to joining the army, the deceased had been in the employ of Mr. G. Newman, St. Cross, and was afterwards with Mrs. Wells... I'm sorry. And was afterwards with Mrs. Wise and Lansell of Drury Street. He was a well-known player with the Winchester Football Club and enlisted in the Devonshire Regiment about 2 years ago. He was 38 years of age and leaves a widow and 2 children. And secondly, the Right Honourable W.F. Lloyd KC, Prime Minister of Newfoundland, spent Saturday afternoon at Hazley Down, where a well-organised programme of sports was carried out by a battalion of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment. He was accompanied by the Honourable J.R. Bennett, Minister of Militia. It was beautiful weather, and civilians as well as military were present in large numbers, a cordial invitation having been issued to all comers. The Mayor, Mr. Alderman Ed Meads, and several people went over from Winchester, and places more nearly adjacent were also well represented. Some American officers were among the visitors.
Now, Noel's going to take us back 200 years.
Yes, one sad item from Monday, July the 6th, 1818. Died early on Wednesday morning, most deservedly regretted, aged 36, Miss Mary Pinnock, eldest daughter of the late Mr. D. Pinnock, wood stapler of this city. In conjunction with her sisters, she had latterly conducted a respectable establishment for the education of young ladies at Salisbury, and had come here to spend the summer vacation. Her premature death presents another awful memento of the incertitude of human life. On Tuesday morning, accompanied by some friends, she rode in an open carriage to Sutton, and on returning in the evening, when approaching this city, the horse became restive. This so alarmed her that she unfortunately precipitated herself from the vehicle and was taken up senseless.
And right back to the present again. We've got Question and Answer, My Winchester, read by Jane.
And this week it is Abby Allen, 27, assistant manager at Shococo of Firmstone Road, Winnall, tells us her favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Cafe Monde. I like their breakfast menu and it's really affordable. Favourite restaurant is Loch Fine. I often go there for a little payday treat of mussels and a glass of wine. What's your favourite pub or bar? Piquant have really good cocktails. My favourite pub is the Black Boy. I go on the Itch and Walk and it's quite nice to go to afterwards. What's your favourite shop? I have 2. Char sells some amazing teas. And I love Winchester antique books. There are a lot of hidden gems. What's your favourite building? Well, probably the Cheswell Rectory. It's a cool little building and it's really old. What's your favourite view? St Giles's Hill, especially at New Year when you can see all the fireworks going off across Winchester. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Frank Turner. His song Wessex Boy encapsulates that Winchester, what Winchester is about, and I get nostalgic for the place every time I hear it. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Up Whiteshoot Ridge there's an old army barracks. It's really cool. What is the best thing about Winchester? In the summer, when it's really lively and the hat fair's on, And also at Christmas, there's a similar feeling where everyone is out and happy and excited. And the worst? Well, there could be a more vibrant night scene. We could do with another decent club. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would have more things for young people to do. Describe Winchester in a sentence. An idyllic, beautiful place to live.
Time for editorial comment. Over to you, Heather.
The right to switch party allegiances. Only people lacking a sense of humour would not have enjoyed Winchester local politics in the last week. The Tories had won a narrow majority at the recent elections, but then their grip on power looked weak after Councillor Kim Gottlieb decided to jump ship, and as an independent, was set to play a pivotal role with the Lib Dems and Conservatives on 22 councillors each. The Liberal Democrats felt that they were poised to take control and have the chance to steer major projects such as the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill 2, the new sports centre and the daddy of them all, Station Approach. The city councillors met at the Guildhall, earnest speeches were made, the debate was heated, and then just as we reached the climax, Councillor Jamie Scott decided to announce he is backing the Conservatives. He even got up and walked across the chamber to join the Tories in protest at the Lib Dems' opportunism. Earlier this week, he announced he is formally joining the Tory group, but stresses no deal was made to secure his return. His and Councillor Gottlieb's moves have attracted criticism. They were elected as a Tory or Lib Dem and have no right to switch allegiance, say critics. Well, politicians have been doing it since the dawn of time. Winston Churchill did it twice. Councillor Gottlieb faces the electors in 2019 and Councillor Scott in 2020. Best let them decide.
This week's first person is by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, his title is Pity This Poor Frustrated Firm. Ever think that government runs our lives too much? Get the feeling that regulations, taxes and haughty advice from politicians hamper us making our own decisions? It's bad enough for us, but state control can be even more frustrating for companies. I think it's been especially damaging for one company which is snowed under with customers. This service company, a household name based 50 miles from Winchester, is a world leader. The service it provides pumps billions into the UK economy every year. Political interference into its expansion plans seems particularly unfair because the firm is facing strong competition from Dutch, French and German companies offering similar travel services. When it started in 1986, the British company had a virtual monopoly here, so the government put a cap on how much it could charge. For years, that price cap reduced the company's earnings, putting it at a disadvantage to continental competitors. Amazingly, the firm still flourished, largely by putting an unprecedented emphasis on retail, and that key innovation was copied around the world. So highly regarded did the UK's firm's retail expertise become that other countries actually paid the firm to manage their own operations. In 2006, the British firm was bought by a Spanish-led consortium. It was a welcome inward investment for Britain. The firm was much bigger in those days, but just 2 years after the purchase, the new owners were ordered by the UK authorities to sell off large chunks of the business they had bought. How unfair was that? All the while, and still today, the firm's plans to improve its service have been thwarted by a political indecision and wrangling over planning permission. The firm is Heathrow Airport, whose long-frustrated ambition for a third runway was last month approved by the House of Commons. That looks like good news for jobs and prosperity in Hampshire. Margaret Thatcher and Tony Blair were both strong prime ministers, but neither made progress on the third runway, so majority slim Theresa May is to be admired. Don't congratulate her yet, though. The Commons go-ahead could be reversed. If work does start on the runway, there'll be, in the short term, more delays of a different sort, because of a 12-lane motorway that lies in its path. I predict months and possibly years of tailback delays on the M25 while a runway bridge the size of a football pitch is constructed over the traffic. When the runway is complete, expect driving to the airport to get harder and expect travelling there by public transport to be easier. Heathrow will have to comply with pollution limits imposed as part of permission for the runway, and that will largely entail reducing car exhaust. That will probably mean reducing parking space at the airport. Passengers travelling from Winchester will be encouraged to switch from car to rail by taking a train to Woking and travelling on by shuttle coach. The airport will also hope to head off criticism of its pollution performance by backing big public transport schemes such as a direct rail link with Waterloo and another with Gatwick. Once the runway is built, however, flights will be shorter. Not in distance, of course, but in time. At the moment, planes routinely queue on the ground for 20 minutes to get on a runway. And often arriving aircraft have to fly around in a circle or two before there's space to land. With a third runway, that waiting time will disappear. Britain's premier air hub will offer more frequent flights to more destinations at more convenient times, boosting our economy by making business visits here easier. The country will be richer with more money for the NHS and schools.
Jane is now going to read an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
And this has three little items this week. The first one, you see him now. Leon Trotsky, the Russian revolutionary, was famously airbrushed out of history. One minute he was at Lenin's side in a famous photo, the next nowhere to be seen. Could something similar happen to Winchester? The Liberal Democrat group posed for a photo before the council meeting last Wednesday that saw a failed coup against the Tory leader Caroline Horrell and her group. Conservative councillor Kim Gottlieb, who resigned to sit as an independent, sided with the Lib Dems, which ought to have been enough to win the motion of no confidence. But then, former Tory Jamie Scott backed his former colleagues, walking across the chamber to sit with the Tories, later saying the Lib Dems' political opportunism was wrong. He has since rejoined the Tory group. Looking at the photo, Councillor Scott is conveniently situated on the far left of the photo, a la Trotsky, should any airbrushing be necessary. And there's a photo of the Lib Dem group at the steps of the Guildhall, with Jamie Scott on the far left. All the men are situated along the back of the photo and the women in front of them, and Jamie Scott conveniently on the far left-hand side of the women's group. The second item is, it's the city's oldest brewery. More info about the little-seen outhouse in the Cathedral Close that featured in Belgarum last week. A cathedral spokesman says it is known as the Deanery Old Bakehouse, although originally it's thought to have been built as the brew house to the deanery in 1540, when local water was so contaminated and beer was the safest thing to drink, and it was using rubble from the dissolved priory of St Swithin. The likelihood is that it was extended and became the Deanery Bakehouse in 1663. Sadly, there are no plans to increase public access. And this includes a photo through the doorway in the cathedral close of the lovely little old deanery buried beneath bushes at the back of a grassy stretch. And the third item, Barton Farm or King's Barton? For 20 years, the development on the northern edge of Winchester has been called Barton Farm. Last year, Carla Holmes decided to rebrand their development as King's Barton, perhaps thinking the name had been tarnished by all that publicity about planning battles. The City Council are happy to go along renaming the Barton Farm Forum, the public committee that is keeping tabs on things. But the University of Winchester Academy Trust has decided not to change the name of its school, due to open in September 2020. The forum heard last week from Alison Lawrence of the Trust, who said, "We're sticking with Barton Farm Academy, a deliberate decision based on the work that has been done, the design of the school and the heritage of the area. The school's design is part based on a barn and traditional farm buildings," explains Lawrence. So it will be the Barton Farm Academy School at King's Barton. Confused? Thousands of people, maybe.
And it's time for What's On. The garden of Wolsey Palace, the home of the Bishop of Winchester, is the setting for the Chesil Theatre's open-air show, The Wind in the Willows, from July the 17th to the 21st. The tale has been delighting the world for generations. This version of Kenneth Graham's family classic, adapted by Alan Bennett, remains true to the original story and contains plenty of comedy, live music and songs. Director Joe Ashwell said, "We're lucky, thanks very much to the Bishop of Winchester, who's kindly given us permission to perform in the beautiful garden at Wolsey Palace, because it is rarely open to the general public. It provides the perfect backdrop for a picnic and is a great setting for the play. We hope audiences will be thoroughly entertained by this fun-filled family show. Our aim is to put a smile on the faces of our audiences, whatever age they are. Performances start at 7:30 p.m. with a 2:30 p.m. matinee on Saturday, July the 21st. Tickets are £13 for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday matinee and £16 for Friday, Saturday evenings. There is a family ticket available for £42, which is for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday matinee, and £48 for Friday and Saturday evening. Tickets available online at chesiltheatre.org.uk or 0333 666 3366. The gates open 90 minutes before each performance, so picnickers can enjoy the gardens beforehand. For more information, please visit website www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. And there is a chance to have two opportunities for Tuesday lunchtime recitals every week. There's one at Romsey Abbey from 1:10 p.m. to 1:50 p.m. Bring your lunch or a coffee and enjoy an informal half hour or so of good music. Free with a retiring collection in aid of Romsey Abbey music. But there's one in Winchester Cathedral on Tuesday as well. And that is from 1 o'clock. And this one is on July the 10th only, though, so just that one chance. It's the Massey String Quartet. Hour-long concerts have been running for over 20 years, bringing to the cathedral hundreds of talented musicians, demonstrating skills on almost every instrument possible. All are welcome, the recitals are free, with a retiring collection. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 6th of July at 4:56 a.m. and begins at 9:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 11th of July, it ends at 4:58 a.m. and begins at 9:21 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Continue with items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
MP lays brick at development, and it's another story about Allswood. Winchester MP Steve Brine donned a high-vis jacket and hard hat to help lay the official date brick for McCarthy and Stone's new retirement development in Allswood. Mr. Brine joined the McCarthy and Stone team, including construction contracts manager Carl Roche, to take a closer look at development plans and find out more about the benefits of Retirement Living Plus. Located in the Dean, the development comprises of a mix of 1- and 2-bedroom apartments designed for those aged 70 and over. They will be available to reserve off plan towards the end of 2018, with first occupations expected in the summer of 2019. Mr. Brine said it was a pleasure to visit the site of McCarthy and Stone's upcoming development in New Allswood and to lay a date brick. It was a good opportunity to meet the construction and marketing teams involved and hear firsthand about the Retirement Living Plus development, which will help to meet the housing needs of retirees in Alsford and the surrounding areas. And there's a photograph of him with the date stone and wearing his hard hat and other people who obviously work on the site surrounding him. The new development will provide a downsizing option for retirees seeking the privacy that comes with owning your own home, but needing a little extra support in the form of domestic assistance. Kim Caldwell, Regional Sales and Marketing Director, said, "We are delighted Steve was able to take the time to visit and to take a look at the plans."
Seaside theme for Hursley Fete. Villagers came together for plenty of fun in the sun at the Hursley Summer Fete. The annual event saw more than 1,000 people head to the grounds of John Keble Church of England Primary School for a day of donkey rides, sandcastles and sweet treats. This year, the fete's theme was Beside the Sea, which saw more than 100 volunteers transform the school field into an idyllic seaside resort, complete with a pop-up beach including a huge sandpit for families to build their own sandcastles, numerous fairground rides and a bouncy castle. All that was missing was the sea, but since that was more than 25 miles away, it was unavailable. Attendees also took part in a candy floss eating competition, ukulele workshops and the Fete's first ever bake-off competition. Anne Ramsdale, who has helped to organise the long-running event, which was originally a church fete, for the past 6 years, said it went really well. The theme was Beside the Sea, so we were really lucky to have the lovely weather as well. It's the biggest fundraising event of the year for both All Saints Church and John Keble School. And this year, we managed to raise £7,500. And there's a delightful picture of father and daughter, Robert Pierce and his daughter Felicity, who is five, enjoying a book at Hursley Summer Fete. They're snuggled up together on a deck chair, and Felicity's got a lovely face painting making her look like a cat with a black eye.
And continuing the fete theme, the oldest fete but still going strong. In 1867 or 1868, someone suggested holding one of those newfangled garden fetes in the grounds of the Hospital of St Cross. Winchester was a sleepy market town, still getting used to the arrival of the railway. 150 years later, the event in the oldest charitable institution in the country is still going strong, attracting more than 2,000 people on Saturday afternoon. Saturday's event in glorious weather raised around £10,000 funds for three charities, the Parish of St Faith, the Winchester Hospice and the Community First Winchester. Not much has changed in the last 150 years, with our Victorian ancestors probably recognising lots of the activities, such as the Morris dancing, Punch and Judy, the Roundabout, and the gentle music courtesy of the Chandler's Ford Boys Brigade Brass Band, amongst others. They would certainly have recognised the Brothers, the residents of the almshouses who traditionally wear black or red gowns and trencher hats. Among those attending the fete was City MP Steve Brine and his family. John Pringle, fete treasurer, said, "This was a wonderful result from a very successful 150th anniversary fete. As one of the oldest fetes in the country, we have always provided a range of family entertainment, the sale of good quality second-hand goods and homemade cakes and other refreshments. The added bonus is that it takes place in the stunning setting of the Hospital of St Cross, one of the Winchester's iconic landmarks." Mr Pringle thanked Carter Jonas estate agents and Shenton solicitors for their support, and Steve Brine, who drew the raffle. One of the prizes was a bottle of House of Commons champagne signed by the Prime Minister, Theresa May. And I have to say, I actually won that bottle.
Hooray!
The fete was opened by the Reverend Reginald Sweet, Master of St Cross, and Reverend Philip Crinks, Vicar of St Faith's. And this is accompanied by several photographs of the event, including several happy people drinking pims and wearing a lot of sun hats in front of the plant stall, and children swinging round on the fairground attraction, it says, as old as the event itself, And then a golf practice, the green looking a little bit dodgy, I think, from the lack of rain. And also one of a young boy, Mason, trying the shooting gallery. Doesn't look terribly safe to me.
Alice in Wonderland over her chic role. It was an ordinary day's work for Hampshire woman Alice Bennett at the legendary Abbey Road Studios, immortalised by the Beatles. Alice, aged 21, from Exton in the Mearn Valley, has been working as a runner at the studios in London for the past year, helping things go smoothly. She didn't expect to play a role in the work of Nile Rodgers, a genuine legend in pop music with his band Chic, who revolutionised dance music in the 1970s. He was at the studios recording his new single, Till the World Falls, when he invited Alice to lay down the song's sultry introduction. Alice said, "I was told Niall needs you now, so I ran into the studio thinking that there was some sort of emergency." Niall spun round in his chair with a big grin on his face and said, "Alice, I need you to do something for you. I need you to introduce the song in a sexy voice." I walked into the live room, put on a pair of headphones and said, "You are now listening to Chic." She added, "When Niall asked me to introduce the song, I thought he was having me on because he knew I was a huge fan of his. Then when I saw he was serious, I was suddenly completely overwhelmed. How often is a person asked to feature on a record with so many of their idols like Niall? That's definitely something that doesn't happen every day, so it really is such a huge honour. Walking into a room with Niall is like being reunited with an old friend. With greetings of high fives and hugs, he instantly makes you feel like part of the family. During sessions here at Abbey Road, he relishes every opportunity to work with like-minded artists. His enthusiasm and energy never diminishing. He really is one of a kind. You can see the glimmer of pride in his eyes when he picks up his guitar, ready for another day, another funky riff. Abbey Road Studios recently announced Niall's appointment as their first chief creative officer, which will see him use the studios as his primary creative base, as well as nurturing new talent. And Chic's new album, It's About Time, will be out on September the 7th. And there's a photograph of a beaming Alice. And Niles, with his beret and dreadlocks, has his arm round her shoulder and is smiling as well.
Thousands raised in challenge. A group of Chandler's Ford residents has taken on a major challenge and raised thousands of pounds for bereaved children. The Courage Foundation triathlon team completed a 26.2-mile night marathon through the New Forest, a 7-mile kayak to the Isle of Wight, and a 100-kilometre cycle round the island, all in under 24 hours, raising more than £19,000 for the Courage Foundation. As previously reported, Charlottesford residents Tony and Ruth Palmer set up the charity in 2015 following the sudden death of their 20-month-old son Jethro Courage. They will now use the money raised by Tony and his friends to provide bereaved families with days out and the opportunity to make new memories while remembering their loved ones. Ruth said, "The team achieved something incredible. I'm so proud of them, all for the athleticism they have shown for our cause. Our original goal of £10,000 seemed impossible when we set out, so we are incredibly grateful for everyone's generosity." And there are two pictures of the Magnificent Six, first lined up facing the camera with dark T-shirts with Courage written across the front, and then away from the camera in kayaks heading out towards the open sea.
And here we have the death of one of the last pilots of World War II Bomber Command. Anthony White Farrell, DFC, AFC, Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur, lately of Sunrise Stockbridge Road, Winchester, passed away peacefully at 2:30 a.m, June the 17th, aged 100 years and 7 months. Tony learned to fly in 1936 and was commissioned into the Royal Air Force at the outbreak of World War II. The earlier part of his war was as a flying instructor before joining Bomber Command as a mosquito pilot. The Mosquito at the time was the fastest aircraft in the world. He reached the rank of squadron leader and was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross and the Air Force Cross, and later in life made a Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur by the President of France for his role in the liberation of France. His flying logbook shows that he took part in several precision bombing missions, as well as being a member of the Pathfinders, who drop flares to enable the heavy bombers to see the targets, hence improving their accuracy. On leaving the RAF, he continued his flying career and became an instructor again, a large part of that career being at the National College of Air Training in Hamble, Hampshire, giving training to BOAC and BEA pilots once the supply of wartime pilots ran out. During his flying career, which lasted until 1981, he amassed 16,400 flying hours, the equivalent of almost 2 years at the controls. Even after retiring, he took the helm on several occasions. At the age of 97, he took the controls of a light aircraft and landed unaided. His final flight was just before his 100th birthday, when he co-piloted a Cessna. He was presented with the Medal of Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur on his 100th birthday, and other celebrations included being presented with the Bomber Command Clasp, being guest of honour for lunches at MOD Boscombe Down and at a reunion of the former flying students, and being given a Chinook flypast at MOD Worthy Down. Tony married his childhood sweetheart Jean Constance Jacob in 1941, and they celebrated their platinum wedding anniversary at Sunrise Retirement Home. She died in 2012. He leaves 4 children, 8 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. As a husband and as a father, he was the kindest and gentlest of men, completely unselfish and with an irrepressible sense of humour, truly one of the last of the few. The funeral will be at Basingstoke Crematorium Friday, July the 6th at 11 o'clock a.m. And this is accompanied by several pictures, including Tony celebrating his 100th birthday with several important people, and he is saluting and wearing his 7 medals that he was with, which he was awarded from the World War II, and also a picture of the Mosquito bomber which he flew.
Now, for people who like cricket, Hampshire target another cup double, and there's a photograph of a beautifully swinging batsman, Colin Munro, in action for New Zealand. Hampshire are aiming to emulate their 2012 double-winning heroics after their record-breaking Royal London One Cup final success at Lord's. James Vince's side amassed 330-7, the highest score in any Lord's final, before 4 runouts, including 3 direct hits, helped secure a memorable 61-run win against Kent. Now Vince's team is targeting a repeat of the 2012 double as they prepare for the Vitality Blast opener at home to Glamorgan. Hampshire are without Mason Crane for the rest of the season, as well as Brad Wheel, who underwent an injection so that he could play against Kent on Saturday. But Hampshire have their new overseas stars, Mujibur Rahman and Colin Munro, available. Afghanistan spinner Mujib, aged 17, will fill the void left by Crane's absence. The mystery spinner burst onto the scene last year with his ability to bowl ripping off breaks, leg breaks and googlies. He came to global attention when he helped Afghanistan win last year's Under-19 Asia Cup in 2017. Mujib was the competition's leading wicket taker and made his full international debut at the age of just 16 in December. The right-armer then helped his country qualify for next year's World Cup, before becoming the IPL's youngest player after Kings 11 Punjab bought him for an extremely large sum of money. The youngster dazzled for Ravi Ashwin's side, taking 14 wickets. Last month he played in Afghanistan's inaugural test against India, but is now preparing for his Vitality Blast debut with Hampshire. He is available for the whole tournament. while New Zealand batsman Munro, one of the game's most destructive batsmen, is set to figure until his Caribbean Premier League commitments in August. The 31-year-old is the only player to score three 21 centuries in the history of the game and has been involved in the best 20-innings competitions across the world, including the Big Bash and the Indian Premier League. Hampshire Director of Cricket Giles White says, "Majeeb and Colin are both very talented and exciting players. Hopefully they can contribute to another successful campaign for us."
Civic lawyer faces criminal allegation. A senior Hampshire County Council solicitor based in Winchester is due in court to face an allegation of perverting the course of justice. Jeremy Penny, 47, of Vale Road, Ashvale, Surrey, is accused of telling the police that a non-molestation order was still in existence in August 2014, knowing that it was no longer in force. No other details are available, but such orders are usually imposed to stop someone contacting another person involved in a legal case. The County Council today said Mr. Penny has been removed from any legal casework. Mr. Penny has been a solicitor since 1999 and works at the County Council in Winchester as the leader in the Adult Safeguarding and Education team. His council profile said Jeremy is primarily responsible for advising senior members of Hampshire County Council's Children's Services Department to ensure that they continue to meet their overriding statutory responsibilities for the safeguarding of children, whilst also advising the Adult Services Department in respect of the safeguarding of adults. Jeremy previously worked in private practice as a family law solicitor before joining the council in 2001. A police spokesman said today, "A man will appear in court to face a charge of perverting the course of justice following postal requisition. This follows an investigation into an alleged incident relating to a report made to police on August 20, 2014. A 47-year-old man from Ashvale, Surrey, will appear at Basingstoke's Magistrates Court on July the 24th. And all that is a wonderful example of an article that says nothing.
And here we have Cemetery Extension officially opened. It's rather a death-themed week, I think, this week. Well, at least we are not going to run out of places to be buried for the foreseeable future. The extension to Winchester's main cemetery has been officially opened. Magdalen or Magdalen Hill Cemetery at Mourne Hill offers an additional 5,600 burial spaces. It includes additional space for the Church of England, Catholic and Free Church areas, and new areas for Muslim and Gurkha faiths, and a plot for travellers. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, said, "This addition to Magdalen Hill Cemetery will provide burial spaces for a broad range of people within our diverse district community, something which will continue to benefit bereaved local residents for years to come. The area was opened by the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and features memorial trees and benches as well as meadowland created by the Butterfly Conservation. Mif Kayum, Secretary of the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association, said, "The association welcomes the dedicated provision for Muslim burials. It is a really good example of what our local authority can achieve by listening and working with minority communities." Lehendra Thapa, representative from the Gurkhas Nepalese community in Winchester, said, "We would like to extend our sincere thanks to Winchester City Council for its commitment to our community in making this extension happen." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the ribbon being cut at the new cemetery by the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and including members of the Gurkha and Nepalese community and the Muslim community, and the Richard Steele and Ian Steele, the funeral directors, and also the Right Reverend David Williams, Bishop of Basingstoke.
Armed siege. Armed police surrounded a Winchester house in a 12-hour standoff with a man inside. The siege ended peacefully after negotiations on Saturday, when a man in his 50s was arrested on suspicion of a fray, a crossbow was recovered at the scene in Stanmore. The police were called at 8:40 p.m. on Friday to Stewart Crescent, and the arrest was made at about 8:40 a.m. on the Saturday. A police spokesman said, "We were called to the scene after a man believed to be involved in a dispute refused to leave an address in the road. There were no injuries to anyone at the time, and the man was alone inside the address. Officers negotiated with the man to encourage him to come out. In this case, taking our time worked, as it was not considered there was any wider risk to the community, as the incident was contained. We would like to thank local residents for their patience while we dealt with it." A 52-year-old local man has been released from custody but remains under investigation. And local city councillor Jamie Scott, who lives on nearby King's Avenue, said, "This is a serious incident. This sort of thing does not often happen in the community."
Launch of book on Anglo-Saxon churches. The latest book from the decades of archaeology in Winchester has been published. The Search for Winchester's Anglo-Saxon Ministers has been written by Professor Martin Biddle, who oversaw the groundbreaking digs in the city through the 1960s. It explores the Anglo-Saxon churches that dominated Winchester in the centuries before the Norman invasion of 1066 that led to the construction of Winchester Cathedral. It focuses on the Old Minster and New Minster, which were torn down by conquerors. The book traces the digs that Professor Biddle led from 1961 to 1970, which rediscovered the lost buildings and shed light on their history. It was overseen by the Winchester Excavations Committee, WEC, which has been studying the city's past since 1962. The book is dedicated to Professor Biddle's late wife, Bertha, who died in 2010. And there's a picture accompanying this of a very distinguished group of people, Winchester Executive Excavations Committee members, Catherine Barclay, Professor Martin Biddle, Claire Chapman, historian and broadcaster Michael Wood, Chairman of WEC Barbara Bryant, Susan Hazelgrove and Fred Lyon, all looking very distinguished and smiling at the publication of this book.
And here we have Award for Local Prison Officer. A member of staff at Winchester Young Offenders Institution has won the award for safety, security and care for his dedication to improving the conditions and reducing violence at the establishment. Ray Carter was nominated by the head of Safer Prisons Winchester for his commitment to developing relationships with the inmates, acting as a mediator and ensuring appropriate behaviour. Stephanie Roberts-Bibby, governor of HMP Young Offenders Institute Winchester, said, "Ray is an exceptional officer who exemplifies Winchester's vision of capable and confident staff, providing care, kindness and compassion to the men and the staff at the prison. What sets Ray apart is his positive can-do approach." Excuse me. "Nothing is ever too much trouble for him, and his dedication to making Winchester the best it can be is humbling."
Friends cycle 935 miles for charity. And there's a picture of three smiling young women in their cycle helmets and obviously wearing special T-shirts that presumably have something to do with what they're up to. It's Louise and Hannah Tice and Eleanor Hill. Three teenagers from Upham have just finished a marathon cycle ride in aid of a local charity, Allegra's Ambition. The girls, sisters Louisa and Hannah Tice and Eleanor Hill, have raised £7,505.19 for Allegra's Ambition, which was set up after the sudden death 2 years ago of Allegra Whittam, aged 16, from Lower Weald, a pupil at St Swithin's School in Winchester and a friend of all the three cyclists. The trio, on a whim, decided to cycle from Land's End to John O'Groats in the north of Scotland. Gosh, that means they were cycling uphill, doesn't it? They discovered they covered a staggering 935 miles, ascended 50,973 feet, descended 50,999 feet, took 14 days, visited 7 bike shops with broken spokes, dealt with only 4 punctures, dared each other to take a spontaneous bungee jump and ate 168 chocolate bars. Louisa said, I've known Allegra and her family since I was six and have long wanted to do something for Allegra's ambition to raise funds and awareness of the charity. So that was the reason that we decided to do this cycle ride. It reflects Allegra's ethos and the way she lived her life. Our morale remained high. We wanted this to be fun and relaxed, but the toughest part was climbing those long, arduous hills through the Lake District.
Holmes on Country Meadow causes fury. Here's another one about planning row. A plan to transform a countryside meadow into a housing development has had residents up in arms in Stockbridge. Retirement housing builder McCarthy and Stone revealed its initial proposal to a packed-out parish council meeting on June the 21st at Stockbridge Town Hall. A protest meeting was due to be held in the Town Hall last night after the Chronicle went to press. A petition against the plans has already attracted 800 signatures. The developer hopes to build 39 retirement apartments, 20 bungalows or cottages, and a 120-space car park using the site of the old police station and Copper Knobs south of High Street. Despite the plan being in its early stages, residents have launched a Save Our Stockbridge petition and committee against the homes, which they see as detrimental to the town's surroundings. Opponent Bruce Williams said, the whole thing is a disaster. I'm not being a NIMBY. I'm just passionate about where I live. They're developing outside the area plan, outside the village envelope, on a floodplain and in a conservation area. We do not want the beauty of Stockbridge to disappear for the sake of a few bank accounts. At a parish council meeting on Thursday last week, McCarthy and Stone spokesman Ed Garcia said the developer wished to get the backing of the community, which was met with laughter. Mr. Garcia told parishioners the plans included a way to ease Stockbridge's car parking strain by building a car park, despite having no confirmation on how it would be run. McCarthy and Stone Regional Managing Director Shane Paul said, we are in the early stages of developing plans for retirement accommodation, which would also create a valuable new public car park for local people. We are looking forward to engaging with the community and local stakeholders over the coming months. The parish council met to decide whether to enter into consultation with McCarthy and Stone. Councillor Richard Ford said, I was surprised by the reaction from residents. Any development in a small village is going to cause a bit of anxiety.
And now council aims to recoup lost income. Taxpayers have potentially lost out on more than £250,000 in rental income following delays in Winchester's Chesil Lodge scheme, although that could be reclaimed from the developer, Civic Chief said. It comes as Councillor Caroline Horrell, City Council leader and portfolio holder for housing, revealed it is expected to have cost £16.98 million when residents move in later this month. As previously reported, the Chesil Lodge Extra Care Scheme was delayed a number of times by developer Galliford Try, leading to the estimate being more than £150,000 over budget. However, Winchester City Council will now seek to recover money through a claim for liquidated ascertained damages, LAD. The 52-flat development for over 55s had an initial completion date of November last year and was pushed back to February following delays. In February, councillors heard from leader Councillor Caroline Horrell that they were still unsure when the major housing project would be completed. Then, in April, the council confirmed contractor Galliford Try has sent a notice of completion, meaning the handover of the building started in May, and last week residents began to move in. In response to a question from independent councillor Kim Gottlieb at last week's council meeting, Councillor Horrell said that as of May 31st, £15.32 million had been spent on the scheme and that the potentially lost £235,000 of rental income would form part of the LAD claim. Councillor Horrell added, I am delighted to announce that Cheshire Lodge has been fully handed over to the council from Galliford Try and is a wonderful addition to the council's stock of affordable housing. Extra care housing is a very important part of our housing strategy and our commitment to provide affordable housing for all sectors of the community. This accommodation allows elderly residents to live independently as their care needs change. The apartments are spacious and they all enjoy private balconies. There is a restaurant on site serving residents and visitors, as well as a treatment room and a hairdresser. And this is accompanied by a picture of the Cheshire Lodge, a bit about which there has been some dispute, which is finally completed on Cheshire Street.
Eight new deacons ordained in Winchester Cathedral. And there's a wonderful photograph taken in the close with the flying buttresses behind them of the eight deacons, each wearing a sash over their robes. And in the centre is an elaborately robed bishop. Eight men and women joined the Diocese of Winchester's team of clergy on Sunday, July the 1st, as they were ordained deacons at Winchester Cathedral. Five women and three men, aged from 37 to 55, bring a huge breadth of background and experience to their new roles. Between them, they have worked in a wide range of sectors, including teaching and the law, before responding to God's call. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, ordained the new deacons following 2 to 3 years of training. Deacons have a special role within the church, often understood as the role of a servant, as they take on a particular responsibility to serve the community and reach out to those in need. Deacons normally go on to be ordained as priests a year later. The ordinands include Tasha Anderson, who's become the new curate for Arle Valley, based around Oresford. Before her ordination, she was the Director of Children's and Family Ministry, Christchurch, Winchester. She will be working in Arle Valley, leading public worship and serving the local area in schools, hospitals and prisons, and working in partnership with community groups to bring about social renewal and transformation. Working with her fellow curates, Tasha will take responsibility for contributing to the mission of the church in the Diocese of Winchester. And Bishop Tim said, "I am delighted to have ordained Tasha this weekend. Deacons lead by example, expressing Jesus' love for the world through their prophetic service. I look forward to working closely with Tasha over the coming years."
Pavilion campaign goes to the fair. The Pavilion Project launched a crowdfunding campaign at Hat Fair on North Wall's Recreation Ground last Sunday. The group teamed up with live event artist Lucille McLaughlin, who held painting workshops for all ages and hat decorating for children. It is raising awareness of its aim for a new pavilion for all the local community at the North Wall's Rec. Mike Caldwell, project coordinator, was delighted with the day. Hat Fair was a terrific location to launch our crowdfunding campaign. It was a great day, albeit a very hot one. The team had the opportunity to chat to dozens of people who showed overwhelming support and enthusiasm for the project. Community support is vital, and we feel that we have this in spades. The Pavilion Project is a community group and charity working with local architects AR Design Studio to replace the dilapidated cricket pavilion and scoring huts on North Wall's Recreation Ground. The new pavilion will be used by a variety of sports clubs, community groups and local schools. The building will be accessible, sustainable and available for all year round use. Planning permission for the proposed pavilion was granted in January this year. The City Council has allocated funds for the new pavilion, and the Pavilion Project team secured substantial funding from the Sport England last year. With funds raised through several local events, the group has secured about 60% of the amount needed to make the project a reality.
Here we have Pupils Make Seats Fit for a Hero. Students took part in a day of worship at Winchester Cathedral as they prepared to move on to secondary school. Ahead of the leavers services, hundreds of Year 6 pupils from across the Diocese of Winchester were invited to take part in the Heroes and Chairs project. As part of this, schools bought basic chairs from local charity shops and then asked their Year 6 students to decorate them so that they would be fit for the heroes they meet each day. The Heroes and Chairs project encouraged students to think about a definition of heroism beyond what they see on television and in the movies, from community volunteers and lunchtime supervisors through to emergency service personnel. The chairs are now on display. Sadly, there isn't a photograph of them.
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 6th of July 2018. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And then please return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.